welcome to the first episode of Sonic Top. Episode 1, If You Have Time to Worry, podcast. This show will be just all about Sonic and upcoming Sonic news, events. It's be discussing the games, the comics, the cartoons, and all the other fine media. With me is my host, the Andy Richter to my Conan O'Brien, Knuckles 87.
Who the hell is Andy Richter?
Andy Richter is Conan O'Brien's sidekick on the Conan O'Brien show.
Okay, you weren't. But... All right, yes.
I am not going to be a bear in a diaper.
Okay. That's my man slave, Corey Holmes, or AKA Jet.
Wouldn't manservant have been more dignified?
Yes, it would have.
And Jet, it works with both me and Knuckles 87 on the Emerald Coast Comics .com or .org? .net.
.net.
.net web comics. He's currently doing the art for my Sonic Eggs comic issue 3, and which will be up by next month.
And for me, he's currently working on something original.
Yeah, he's doing some original stuff as well. All right. So, what have you been up to, Knuckles?
I don't think I've played a Sonic game in like a month. I guess I did play Sonic CD briefly on my Android. But yeah, I've mostly been playing Panzer Dragoon Orta. Writing stuff about that.
That's cool. The only thing I've been really playing outside of the Binary Domain demo is the new Jak and Daxter HD trilogy in 3D, which is awesome. Really getting addicted to that again. And I went back to Sonic Generations and finally beat the two missions that really are giving me problems.
God, some of those missions are goddamn annoying.
What?
I think some of those missions are annoying.
Oh yeah, the last two on Planet Wisp where you had to be chase your doppelgangers, the ones I was really stuck on.
I really hated that one mission where it was basically Vector throws SBO, I think it was, in Seaside Hill.
Okay, one thing you should know about Jet. Jet is our guest host for this, just our guest for this episode. We're going to try to be bi-weekly or monthly. It all depends. We'll have a third seat is going to be our vacant seat, which will open up to other guests. So he probably won't be here in our next episode, but we'll have some other people as well.
Yes, such as perhaps.
I'm fired already.
Yep, pretty much. Anyway, what have you been up to, Jet?
Oh, I've been playing some Morrowind and Oblivion in anticipation for when I eventually get my hands on Skyrim. Yesterday, I created an army of Emperor Septims and went to war with I forget what they're called.
I couldn't get into Oblivion worth a damn, but I love Skyrim. I'm seriously addicted to that.
Oh, I love Oblivion. Oh. Oblivion and Skyrim. But my God, did it get boring about a week ago.
I've been out of it for about a week. I got to get back into it myself.
There just comes a point where, you know, you're in this game, you're running around, you're hitting things with your gigantic sword, and it just hits critical mass. You've done everything a million times, and you don't feel like doing anything anymore.
There's only so often you can yell, Vus Roda.
Yeah, there's only so many times you can knock Lydia off of a mountain or get her attacked by a dragon or have her attack. You know, I'm very...
She takes a lot of abuse and comes back for more.
Between myself and Jeff, just think about a cruel person's relationship with Lydia, and you'll get the idea.
It would be nice if the adoring fan was in Skyrim so I could take... Come with me to go fight dragons.
All right, time for Sonic news. As you know, back in late December, They announced Sonic 4 Episode 2, and ever since they've been showing concept art week by week for about the past, what, 3 or 4 weeks? Last week, because of Hedgehog Day, they showed one of the first Eggman bosses, which looks great. Also, we found out that the Archie's Supersonic Special magazine, which is quarterly, the next one coming out in April and May will have a Sonic 4 Episode 2 and adaption of it. Does this mean that the release date for Sonic 4 Episode 2 will be around May? What do you think?
Probably not, but should be somewhere around there. I would expect a summer release. I mean, when you look at Sonic 4 Episode 1, it had roughly the same kind of reveal schedule, and it was planned for a summer launch until, you know, everyone found out that it had these horrible, horrible iPhone levels and stuff.
Well, technically May is summer, but you know what? The Summer of Live on Xbox usually starts in June, like mid-June, and that's probably the best time
to do it,
and I think that's when they're going to kick it off myself.
I think summer starts in June. I'm going to look that up.
Well, the summer movie season, I know, starts in May. And speaking of summer, we got Summer of Sonic and Sonic Boom release dates. Summer of Sonic will be out this June 7th in London. No specific area in London, though, unfortunately, right now. And that has its own website you can check out. And Sonic Boom will be at the House of Blues July 13th during the San Diego Comic-Con, and I'll definitely be on that. Are you going to the London show or the San Diego?
Well, I don't know. I'm currently trying to work out some crazy-ass schedule that will somehow allow me to do both. But it's definitely going to be hard, considering there's only an 8-day difference between the two, and I'm also going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, you'll be jet-lagged as hell, man, if you try that.
Well, I don't know. I've done this before. Like, I went to HeroesCon, then went straight to E3, but my God, that just killed my productivity. So I don't know if there's really much of a point in going to both. We'll have to see. Speaking of jet, if I do go to Summer of Sonic, I might be taking him with me.
He's always tried to abduct me to go to one of these big conventions or another.
Well, yeah, you could do sketches for a lot of people there.
I think you may soon resort
to... You can help promote Sonic Eggs, of course.
Yes. Go and, like, do some nice shades commissions.
I have something to say about that to you two privately, but we'll discuss that later. So Sonic Boom, is anyone intending to go to that? I know I will.
Well, it's during San Diego Comic-Con, which I go to every year, so that's no problem for me.
Yeah.
I don't really think I'm going to make a trip all the way to California.
Oh, come on.
You're already wanting to drag me across the ocean.
It's only
Why
a few
do
hundred
I have
miles
to drag across
drive.
The continent, too?
Sonic Generations PC Hacks is the next thing we got on our little list here.
Yeah.
I've seen some of that.
Hacks just do the coolest things.
It really makes me want to upgrade my computer just to play this.
I have it on my computer. I could give it a whirl, maybe.
I mean, this is a lot like the whole, not a lot like, but kind of similar to the Sonic Mega Mix things, where they just took all these different Sonic characters and stuck them in Sonic 1.
You mean Fighters Mega Mix?
Yeah, and then, of course, they're also making all these original levels.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Sonic Mega Mix, the...
Yes. That's such an awesome game. It's for the Sonic CD, too. It's just wow. But what's this thing about Unleashed levels?
They are programming old Unleashed levels like Chunan and such and putting them in the game through Sonic Generations.
Wow.
They've got quite a bit from what I've seen of Apodos.
They're checking all the hit points and everything and getting the lighting done just right. They got parts of Chunan done just perfectly. The only thing was missing was the top of the dragon's head.
Huh.
Dragons don't need heads.
I understand I don't understand why Sega doesn't do stuff like that. Like, just take levels from a previous game and stick them in the next one. Make them longer or something.
Seems like the fans are having to do the DLC for them.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Sega!
Money!
Things. You could be making money. This is why you don't make as much money as you should.
Oh, I think they'd probably argue that they would lose money if they stuck content from old games in new games.
Well, that should probably be free, but I'm talking about all new DLC.
Right. Anyway, speaking of downloadables, we got Sonic Triple Trouble coming to the 3DS. It's been rated by the ESRB, rated E, along with Shinobi, which is E10+. And since it's been rated now, chances are it should be coming within another couple of months.
Yeah, about fucking time. Sonic Triple Trouble has been that one virtual console game I've been waiting months for.
They announced them last year, but nothing's come since. But finally, we got some confirmation.
Triple Trouble was supposed to come over the summer, along with three other Game Gear games, and then nothing. But
Game Gear?
If anyone listening to this hasn't played it, that is basically the best Sonic game ever made for the Game Gear, and it's really very close in quality to what you'd expect from a Genesis title. Obviously, graphically, it's a Game Gear title, yeah. But
that and Sonic Chaos are great games. If you have a Game Gear.
It was my big Sonic game when I was a kid.
Love for Sonic the Hedgehog 2?
Yeah, screw Sonic 2.
Oh, dear God, no. That was so hard. Can't even get past the first boss on that game.
Fight this thing with no rings.
On Sonic 2, you could not get past the first boss?
No.
Oh, I'm not talking about Game Gear Sonic 2. I'm talking about Genesis Sonic 2.
Oh, Genesis Sonic 2, yeah, no problem. I beat the whole game.
I was going to say, my God, you couldn't get yourself over that drill, really?
No, I was talking about Game Gear.
Yes.
How did you get to Genesis when we were talking about Game Gear games? Jeez.
It's as good as the Genesis titles. At least I thought I did.
Well, speaking of portable Sonic titles, now we got a demo out of Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympic Games on the 3DS eShop. It has five different events, so like shooting and cycling and swimming and that. What do you guys think? I thought some of the events were okay, like the swimming with where you had to use the touchpad along with the stylus to do the circles, but my favorite was the cyclist event where you had to just tilt to get the landing just right. It reminded me a lot of Excitebike. I really liked that one.
Yeah, the demos were kind of hit and miss.
Yeah, well, that's how Mario and Sonic pretty much is. It's a bunch of hit and miss mini games, but I enjoyed it overall. I think over the Wii version, I think it's got potential.
I haven't bought a Mario and Sonic since the original, but I am considering getting one of these games. I mean, what we saw at E3 for the Wii version definitely looked much better than past games, but I don't know. I hear that the 3DS version has a story mode.
Yeah, that's what the DS Winter one had, like a cheesy RPG mode to it where Eggman and Bowser were trying to take over the Winter Olympics, and he had to talk to everybody and stuff. And it was okay, but it was cheesy at the same time.
Huh.
I played the first Mario Party and Sonic Shuffle like way back in the day, and since then I've had a terrible fear of anything that even looks like a party game. So
yeah, that's what they really sell to is the Mario Party crowd. That's why nobody I know has them, but they're selling like 2.something million copies.
I woe to admit that I also played Sonic Shuffle, and I actually kind of liked it. Ridiculous difficulty and all.
I couldn't stand that.
I had some pretty bad taste in games back then sometimes.
Okay, and now we got Crush 40, who are working on some new songs for a new album, but they say they have no plans for an upcoming Sonic game. What do you think?
But they've opened their hearts. They've lived and learned. How could they not have plans for Sonic?
Yeah, that sounds like a Sonic song. It sounds like something that's going to be put into a Sonic game.
When was the last time Crush 40 really did a Sonic song? I mean, Bowling for Soup worked on the main theme for Sonic Unleashed.
They did a few on Black Knight.
Really? I thought Black Knight was done by, what's his name? Man, it was from, it's some really big video game composer.
No, I think they had, three or four songs on Black Knight.
They did the opening song.
Yeah, they did the opening and they did the ending.
Okay, so they did.
And I think they had Fight the Night was one of theirs, too. I'm not sure.
Is that the one with the final boss in the game?
No, that's the middle boss where we fight the Black Knight.
Well, I do know that they redid, they did a cover for the final boss music.
That I did not know about.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the woman who, sang it practically, that group practically sounds like a female version of Crush 40 anyway.
Nah, I'm not aware of that one.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're not working on a new Sonic game.
Yeah, if they're not, because they haven't done an original album in quite a while. It's always been covers for their Sonic games, so I wouldn't be surprised if they just do a full album. Because they got Cash, and they do pretty good. Well, they do good on remixes. Their original stuff, meh. I don't really care for the stuff they did on Sonic Colors that much. I do like the remixes, but their original stuff, I'd rather not.
I have a love-hate relationship with Sonic Colors' main theme. I don't know, there's something about
it. Reach for the Stars is okay, but the final one, Speak With Your Heart, God, that's awful.
I don't even remember that one.
Ooh, you suck.
Just for that, we're going to stick it at the end of the show. We'll put Speak With Your Heart at the end. All right, now... another little tidbit is Yuji Naka went to Sega's little animation studio, which I gotta find the name of, and he said he saw them making a little Sonic movie. Now, he just put the words movie, and we don't know if it means a CGI for an upcoming Sonic game, or just a CGI that's already been done for, Generations or Mario and Sonic. We don't know. So it's kind of an interesting little thing, is because he just said it was a movie, but that could mean anything. Nux, what do you think?
It is not a movie. It's going to be for a game. Fans have been getting their hopes up for a Sonic movie for as long as I can remember, and the most they're ever going to get is that Japanese OVA.
That was great. Although they did Night of the Werehog as well, and that was a short.
That was a short. Actually, surprisingly short, but to their credit.
Yeah, it was a great high quality short.
No dialogue, no cheesy jokes, just visual gag.
It even made Chip likable. My God, that's an accomplishment in itself.
Yeah. Come on, Chip. You're an artist. You love the CGI crap.
You're kind of quiet, Chip.
Well, every time I speak. Every time I speak, it's all like, oh, yeah, and then there's that, okay, well, oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah, it's cool, man.
It's the Marza Animation Studios. That's the name.
This summer, coming to a video game near you, Sonic the Hedgehog the Movie 2, witnessed by Yuji Naka.
Anywho.
I'm not sure what to think about that. I mean, I just heard about this, now.
Oh, you didn't know of that before?
Well, I read it in the thing you sent me, but I really don't keep up with news too much because I really don't need to most of the time. I'll get online and I'll be like, hey, what's up? Here's a link to something on TSSZ.
I don't even bother with TSSZ. Well, actually, I'm thinking of, something else. TSSZ, I do look at. They're okay for news sometimes, because they'll get some news updates, that we'll post end up posting on our site.
And they also they've also done a pretty good job of covering the Ken Penders thing.
Yeah, ooh, they have.
We're coming up on that subject in a moment.
Yeah, just a moment. That's partially what I have to do with the next item is all Tumblr for you, I call it. We got two Sonic Tumblr sites that are getting a lot of press with the or a lot of hits with the fans right now. The first one is Sonic Just Running Stupid, which is a whole Tumblr people putting in their own animation of Sonic just running like a complete idiot or just walking like a complete idiot. It's awesome. If you Google it and check, make sure to check it out. It's a lot of fun to read, look through. There's some great animations there. The other is Moment of Archie Sonic, although the site's also called Oh Boy. Yeah. And they got some incredible bad Sonic art from the Archie comics from way back in the day. And some fairly recent stuff.
Yeah, like that Matt Herms thing with Sally looking all cross-eyed.
Yeah, there's quite a few lazy-eyed Sallys and a Sonic with disproportional bodies and such.
They keep picking on my boy, Stephen Butler.
Yeah, and Stephen Butler, I submitted one of that when... Because Stephen Butler's a great artist, but he likes to put human anatomy into his work, and it doesn't really fit with little cartoon animals. And
oh, God.
One of the characters, the Antarctic Freedom Fighter, Celia, she used to be just a little seal with little long eyelashes and a beret, and that's how you knew she was female. And now he's boobs on her. So I just call him Stephen Boobs on a Seal Butler. But other than that, he's a great artist. And he did the latest issue with Jeffrey, and he did a really good job on that. Although I could have done without the stubble on the face. That's a little weird to have a furry character who's got stubble coming outside of his own fur hair. It's odd.
Even animals get that 5 o'clock shadow these days.
And speaking of the Moment of Archie, he's been... talking smack a lot about Ken Penders as of late, mainly due to the Ken Penders, not trial, because it hasn't officially gone yet.
Are you sure we can use his name without being sued?
Really? Ken Penders has been suing Archie Comics, in case you guys didn't know, over residuals for his work on the Knuckles comics and on the Sonic comics, which... And I feel is very fair. I mean, if a company's making money off of your work, you should get paid for that work, even if you worked on that a long time ago. I agree with that. It's the fact that he's trying to get copyrights to his characters that he created for the Knuckles the Echidna series, and he's trying to resell those characters in books. And he claims to have the copyrights for him, but all he did was go to the copyright artist office. They give him the copyrights, which they don't look at the legal proceedings for, and gave it to him for there. And now Archie is doing what's called, let me look it up, a motion for summary judgment in the Penders case, which basically means they want the judge to just look this over and do the ruling right away without even... go into trial, which they feel they're confident enough that it's not going to happen. Now here's my problem with the Penders stuff on this. Like I said, I agree that he deserves residuals. And unfortunately, most comic book companies, including DC and Marvel, they have a hard time with getting residuals to the artists who are giving credit to the artists who made that stuff. Just a moment. Yes, you guys are being kind of quiet. Knuckles87 is just giving me a note. Anyway.
Well, yeah.
Man, this is really going to have to be edited in an audio. Anyway, yeah, related to him or know him in some way. So he's the center. He's the nexus of the entire arc. Without him there, nobody really cares that much about those characters that they can really be... really be a good commodity outside of that. That's my thoughts about it anyway. So if he had just sued over the residuals, I would be a lot more understanding in this case, but trying to claim copyright to characters that he set, that he signed, or at least Archie says he signed a work-for-hire agreement on, you know, and the characters that have that Sega Echidna design, he can't really reuse those characters. And I don't think he can make enough money off of them, even if he could.
Generally, with a licensed comic like that, even if he did create them, the companies that are licensing the product out to like have comics made out of it, they're generally going to keep that character as like copyright to them, not like the comic company or the creator. Like in Transformers, for example, there have been several characters that were created in the Marvel run, and then IDW, the company that's doing it now, would reach back and pull those out, and they'd use them in their run. And I don't exactly see why Sega would bother to do any different with Sonic and characters and properties related to the franchise.
Yeah, and it's a bit hypocritical, because now he's also trying to sue Sega and EA for Sonic Chronicles, the storyline, where it's a very similar storyline to what he had in the Knuckles 87 comics, where Knuckles and the Sonic gang find out there's more echidnas that are living in another dimension, and there's a one female one that starts out as a villain and becomes kind of his friend through the whole thing. So it's kind of the Shade character is kind of a knockoff of Julie Sue, and the Dark Brotherhood is kind of a knockoff of the Dark Legion. But then again, they're just taking an idea that he came up with to make the story around, but it's the exact same thing he's kind of doing. He's taking these Echidna characters, wanting to keep the Sega look to them, and trying to resell them. They can't really do that, you know?
That's just so ridiculous. There are so many Superman knockoffs in the comic book industry that DC could probably nuke the entire comic industry by that logic. I mean,
yeah, he has absolutely no case, I believe, with Sega or EA.
Let me be blunt about Penders for a moment. Even in regards to residuals, Penders signed a contract. Now, when you sign a contract, you bind yourself to certain things, and you don't get certain things. Now, Penders, if he wanted residuals, he should have been fighting for residuals years ago.
Yes, I agree.
You know, Archie reprinting their old stuff is nothing new. You know, they first began reprinting things in 2003 when Penders was still there. I mean, he had to have seen that this would eventually happen. Now, I do believe that a creator should get residuals if his stuff is resold, but I also believe that a company should be able to have their contract honored without being sued. If Penders did not get residuals in his contract, then he doesn't get residuals. I mean, I he can fight for them, I guess. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, if he was clearly stated in his contract that he doesn't get residuals.
For residuals.
I don't remember correctly, but
expand it. Then when he tries to expand it to incorporate all these huge sweeping things, I'm gonna sue Sega. I'm gonna sue EA. I'm going to take my little slingshot. I'm not just gonna pick on Goliath. I'm also gonna pick on Saruman and Sauron and their gigantic metal castles. And I'm going to win because I have an incredibly inflated ego or something. Now, regarding Ken Penders, I have this old friend from some old Sega site. I believe his message board name was Renata Valencia or something. I really don't remember, but he told me that Ken Penders was an ass. Shigs, you should probably Shigs, you will cut that because. I do have to talk to Penders at some point, but he told me that Penders was not the best person to work with. You know, this was when Penders, I think, had only recently left Archie, and I didn't believe him at the time, but after seeing what he's tried to do in regards to taking back characters he created for a licensed property that most of them are just copied and pasted versions, what logic that follows?
Let's play a game from a moment in Sonic history, or whatever that Tumblr's called. Nux or Lock?
Yep, actually, he has a new image that came out today that has a whole bunch of the echidnas and Knuckles at the end, and they all look identical to Knuckles. They're all drawn perfectly just like Knuckles. I'm going to put that in the show notes so people can see those in the comments.
They are literally, they literally copy and paste. Literally. This isn't me over-exaggerating something. This was literally a copy-and-paste job for these characters, where they added some spikes or some eyebrows or some beards.
Right.
I don't see anything
win a cape like that.
Knuckles with a new hat.
Knuckles in a robe.
Yeah, pretty
Knuckles
much.
Knuckles with boobs.
Basically.
Knuckles with boobs. Yeah, and little eyelashes.
But when this whole lawsuit thing started, I don't exactly remember correctly, so I'm basically asking, wasn't Ken Penders having some sort of financial trouble or something? I don't remember.
I don't remember hearing about any kind of financial trouble. I know he was trying. I know he was going ahead with several projects.
He's got two projects that still haven't been lifted off the ground that have been going around for 3 years. One is a movie based on his comic that only lasted one issue, The Lost Ones.
They even last one issue. I don't believe it even really launched. I think it just had some sort of giveaway release at some comic book stores.
And I think that's mostly been filmed and had been in post-production forever. And one's called The Republic, which is an internet show about if Republicans completely took over the White House without any Democratic Party. Yeah,
I didn't realize it was literally about Republicans taking back the White House.
Oh, that's what he told me it was about him.
Wow, I mean, I'm a full-blown Democrat, but even I have to say that's a little over the top.
Yeah, I mean, I like Ken Benders. Okay, I mean, every time I've met him, he's been like a nice guy. But having sympathy for him, it's kind of like sympathy for the devil. The way he's been handling this court case is ridiculous. Now, when you're suing someone or on trial, the best legal thing you could do is keep silent. But he's constantly talking and defending himself to other posters on his web board. And he's showing off this artwork for his next Guardian Echidna graphic novel that he wants to sell this year before the case is finished. All this stuff can damage him at any time during his case.
Well, you know.
You know.
You know.
I mean, back to my stupid over-the-top David and Goliath strategy.
Hello? Hello?
Did we lose him?
I think we lost him.
Well, I'm right here.
Okay, you're kind of cutting in and out.
How am I cutting out?
I know, couldn't hear the background noise. That you actually sounded better, so we thought you were gone.
Oh, wait, you can hear me fine, but the background noise was gone. God damn you. Nah. Now I lost my train of thought. Thanks a lot. That was a perk, and he was nice at Comic-Con, but, I mean, if you sign a contract, that's kind of a hard thing to forget, right?
Right.
You can't kind of be banking on Archie no longer having contracts. As a matter of fact, That could be why he waited a few years. Maybe he thought they would get lost because he wasn't working anymore.
Yeah, it'll be pretty crazy if on court day Archie walks in. Here they are!
Really?
You're screwed!
Well, going by what we're hearing, I think they already did that.
Yeah, pretty much it sounds like. But the problem is this could hurt Archie's renewal contracts with Sega. Because now Sega's got problems with a former writer of theirs suing him and suing Archie and suing everybody left and right. They're probably worried like Ian Flynn or somebody else would do the same thing like 10 years down the line.
Well, I don't know. I think they'd only really be worried if 10 contenders won. I mean, this isn't something that happens very often.
That's
lots
true.
Of people work on licensed properties all the time, and I don't believe this really happens. I mean, even with Dan DiCarlo, bless his heart, who sued Archie for something he did create at the company, you know, even he didn't win, and wasn't able to win because of Archie's contracts.
Yep, and Archie has basically stolen his art style for the last like 30, 40 years. And even Archie is bringing this up in this case that they won against Dan DiCarlo, and Dan DiCarlo actually had a shot.
Yeah, and this is generally why I never really thought this case had much of a chance. And, you know, it was shitty what Archie did to Dan, but...
Yeah, it was.
I do not hold any of that sympathy for Penders.
Anyway, speaking of Archie, now we're going to get to the Sonic comics. I know everyone's... been up to date so far. The latest issue is 233 with the trial of Jeffrey St. John. I'm in the middle of reviewing that for Sonic Stadium. That was a pretty good issue. I mean, problem I was having last year when this whole Naga's trying to take over Mobotropolis thing is that Jeffrey St. John suddenly coming out and he's an Ixus wizard all of a sudden. And he's on Naga's side. I'm like, how the hell did this happen? It feels like it came out of nowhere, just out of left field. I kept thinking to myself, how the hell is, you know, Ian Flynn going to backtrack this in a way that works? And in this issue, he really shows how well he did it. I mean, Jeffrey's basically known Naugus since his childhood when he was looking through his dead father's belongings and finds this mystical artifact while Naugus is in the the Zone of Silence.
Which looks mysteriously like a power ring, like every other magical object in this comic.
Well, it's a power ring with like a little stone attached to it. It's like a gem or something.
I'll admit,
Zone of Silence, you could sure talk a lot in it.
When I first read this comic, I thought that, wow, Ian really did think of everything. Ian is a person who knows the canon. You know, considering how much he's done to kind of rewrite aspects of the canon, he's had precious few mistakes. I mean, one that I do remember was when he had Mammoth Mogul, a villain that most Sega fans probably haven't heard of, exists at a point in the comic when he couldn't have been around. But aside from something like that, it's really great how meticulous he interwove this new backstory into things.
Yeah, I mean, obvious that he went back and looked all the other issues and did everything he could to, you know, keep his trail nice and clean.
I wasn't sure that you were going to like it, Jason.
That was my top complaint on how exactly this came about. Because I always saw St. John as someone who was very faithful to the kingdom and following King Max's orders, but also had his Rebel Underground to take care of and all. But the way he handled it was done very well.
Yeah, and I remember how St. John really kind of acted like a bit of an ass. And
Well, technically he still is an ass. Even if sympathy for him for losing Hershey, he's still a backstabber, and he's a great anti-hero.
I was unaware he was acting like an ass.
He is an ass.
I'm talking about when he was manipulating Elias and really just kind of ruling the kingdom through him. I mean, that really worked very well with the backstory. Jack, you've been trying to say what?
I was going to say I really liked the reference that was made in this to, like, they included those two judges. I forget what they're called, but they were way back
Hip and Hop
around during the trial that Sonic had after he was roboticized.
Like, yeah, Ian loves to use very rare and very, very hardly ever used characters. Like Harvey who was only in like an off panel before 200 some odd issues ago. Now he's made him a major character at the during the backstory of this.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. Fun fact about the lawyers Hip and Hop and Archie. They are they were in the Sonic game Sonic Spinball, where where they helped you through a level. That's they're actually like very minor game characters that have been existing in more comic books than games.
Yeah, so they're technically game characters, but just barely.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, but anyway, the Harvey Hoop thing is basically, what the hell is his name? King Elias. He's lost his crown, which that's one problem I have with the whole thing from the last few issues, is the way that he lost the crown. He just got it swiped from him by Jeffrey St. John, and he just slapped it on Nagus's head, and the people want Nagus as king. And that's pretty much it. They had no trial, no ceremony, nothing. He just swipes the crown, slaps it on Nagus's head, Nagus is king.
Well, the people were supporting Nagus, so I don't know.
Anyway, so now he's conspiring against him and having Harvey Who help him out. You'll have to read the comic, but the little speech Harvey gives about King Max and why he's such a darn fool, it was a really great little speech.
It was perfect, because King Max was such an asshole. It's impressive how many of these characters were assholes. What you think about. I mean, Doc, the King, Jeffrey...
Yeah, I mean, Elias could be a bit wimpy at times, but at least he tries and is honest.
You were saying, Jet?
Those people, man, they seem to be going crazy about absolutely everything since the whole Iron Dominion. I don't know, I half expect them to go nuts and start ostracizing the craziest things just because they feel threatened by it. Like, oh my god, it's a praying mantis, the bugs, get them out.
Well, you know, frightened populace is a stupid, annoying populace.
Yeah, and it's not helping with the Nagus, because Nagus has actually been using a spell to make them more frightened, which is why they're all scared of Nicole, despite the fact that she's the one who's been building the city and trying to keep it safe with the shield.
Those people are such ungrateful asshats.
Nagus didn't need a spell. He just needed to let Mina keep singing.
Yeah. That really does not help Mina's likability either, I might add. And I was actually really beginning to like her. Though I guess it's good to have characters with flaws like that.
You know. Well, in the end, though, she realized that she was making a mistake and that people were getting angry over stuff that, you know, really was unimportant at the time. So she kind of learned her lesson, but it was too late by then. The damage had been done. Now, Sonic...
up where she left off.
Yeah. Now, Sonic Universe 37 won't be out till later this week.
I already have it, and I read it.
Yeah, so we'll be talking a little bit the last few stories, which was the Babylon Rising story arc. And in this, the Babylon...
This is where we have two very different opinions.
Yeah. The Babylon Rogues, which I accidentally misspelled as Rouges during my... review, and then I had to take them all back and re-spell them as Rogues, which would have been hilarious to see, like, a little drawing of all these Verouches on little hoverboards. Anyway, the Babylon Rogues are looking for the Babylon Garden, and they find this key in this little temple area, and they have to fight off a golem. This is not the first issue. This arc is being written by Tracy Yardley. It's only his second story arc he's ever done, and I think he did a really good job with it so far. Pardon?
Weren't they fighting a genie?
Yeah, they're fighting some kind of genie golem thing. I can't exactly remember what.
It was a genie robot, I believe, or a genie hologram, one of the two.
Yeah, it starts off like an adventure that focuses on them. They take the key, this mystical cube artifact. And then they're attacked on the way out by the Battlebird Armada. And we, through there, we get their backstory of how they left the Armada. And, you know, what kind of characters they are. And that's, that was actually done very well. But the problem I have with the story is that midway through, it takes this huge turn from an adventure that focuses on the Babylon Rogues into this big adventure that it focuses, well, not focuses, but includes the main cast from the main book and is actually tied into it now, because they end up having to work back with the pardon me, the Armada. And so they're stuck. The Babylon Rogues are stuck working with the Armada again, and now they're taking the key. They find the area where the Babylon Garden is, and it's directly below Mobitropolis. And so there you end up finding Nagus and everybody else on Mobitropolis that end up wiping out a good chunk of the city in the process.
Yeah, well, Nagus is talking with the voices in his head.
Take something that's a nice little adventure and ramps up it to way too big of an epic adventure, is in my
opinion. That makes it so awesome.
But I do like the ending, the way it worked out, and it ties in with the way they are, their origins in the game, which is actually both good and bad, because I think it's stupid that there's space alien genies or whatever.
In the comic books, they are merely space aliens.
Yeah.
And in the game,
I like even Storm goes, like, oh, we're genies. Aliens.
Space alien genies in the games.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't really care myself for how overpowered the Lord Balbird Cuckoo became. I mean, yeah, he's the leader, but he became like overly badass more than I was expecting to. He's way strong. And then he just walks up to Nagus and slugs him in the stomach, knocks him off his ship. And this is a character, Nagus can turn into smoke at any time. Sonic can't land a hit on him. And this character just walks up and slugs him because it's, you know, right when he least expects it, I guess.
Yes,
I'm sure he would turn into smoke if he wasn't arguing with himself.
Yeah. I thought overall it was a pretty good arc, but those are my nitpicks on it myself.
It kind of became unmemorable for me after they got past the whole battle diaper versus hoverboard thing.
That's hilarious.
Battle diaper.
That's what they keep calling it, too. Speedy's little flying apparatus, which is basically a big metal diaper.
Was it a metal diaper? Oh, fun fact. Another fun fact for Sega fans. The Battlebird Armada was the main bad guy. Were the main group of bad guys in Tails Adventure.
For the game here, yeah.
Now, in regards to that, did Speedy have a battle diaper in that?
I think so, yeah. I think it was just the way he was designed.
Huh.
Now, either it was a diaper or it was like a partial egg or something.
Now, as for my opinion of the comic book, now, I was not really sure what I was going to get from this. Tracy Early had written something before. It was sort of an environmentalist Sonic X comic, and I had thought that was probably one of the poorest Sonic X comics I'd ever read.
Yeah, plus it took a lot from a Sonic battle. It was pretty much the same plot.
Yeah, I was have kind of probably this very uncalled for prejudice that artists can't write, just like writers typically. Just like writers often can't draw. I'm sure that that's a very, very wrong assumption.
Yeah, because if you look at John Byrne and George Perez, they can write very well.
That was something.
Nick Roche in Transformers is a pretty good writer.
That was something I was willing to attach to Tracy, but with this arc, he really surprised me. It was suitably epic. The dialogue was very fun, the characterization was very strong, and the way it tied into the comic book, it happened at this very hectic time in the main comic book's storyline, and then we had this other thing that adds on top of it. In addition to a coup.
Yeah, I do love how pissed off Sonic is during this whole thing.
And Bunny Rabbit being crystallized and de-roboticized and Mobotropolis getting attacked by a giant robot. Now it gets nuked. You know, it's just one thing after another that gets kind of adds up and gives you this feeling of, wow, this comic is really getting crazy. You know, the status quo is just in constant flux right now.
Well, my other little problem with issue is Sonic Universe 35 came out a week before Sonic 232, yeah. And it spoiled pretty much everything that happened in 232, unfortunately, because it was so tied in.
But this worked out fairly well for me because I ended up in the correct order. Because that's when my subscription kicked in. I started getting my early comic books at my new house. And so I ended up being able to read 232 and then Sonic the Sonic Universe story. And it just went together marvelously. Now, the interaction between the Babylon Rogues and Speedy, it's really probably one of the it's probably the best chemistry I've ever really seen in Sonic Universe.
Yeah, I do like the Balbird Armada. Yeah, they're actually my favorite villains outside of Eggman and their group.
You see that there's just Speedy is livid towards the Babylon Rogues, and
it's partial jealousy, I think. I mean, birds have the natural ability; they want to be free, and he's stuck because he's the son of the.
That's exactly
Battle
right.
Lord. He's stuck
this
there.
This was after, of course, the Babylon Rogues. He did used to really look up to them, and then they leave, and I forget what happens exactly. He feels betrayed, as I recall. I think he used to really look up to Jet, and then, bang! You know, the Babylon...
And then he had his battle diaper made.
Right.
Then he had his battle diaper made, so he'd feel like a big boy. But, yeah.
And Mommy, I'm a big kid now.
Then there's the interaction between Novice and big Battlebird Cuckoo. And the comic books haven't really had a powerhouse villain. They've had magic, technology, but not a powerhouse villain. Now we got, and that's exactly what the kind of role that Cuckoo fills. And I love it when I see two villains interact with one another.
Yeah, that scene just didn't work for me. It's like the Sunny the Cocoa Puffs Cuckoo Bird basically beating a Saruman or something from the Lord of the Rings.
Well, this is Sonic the Hedgehog. We have super speeding Mickey Mouse turning into super speeding Mickey Mouse and then beating the crap out of Novice. The Sonic comics have always been about colorful characters beating up characters that aren't quite so colorful. It's always been something I've kind of felt was kind of weird about the Sonic comics, but I don't know, I'm used to it by now. I definitely thought it worked here. And it definitely felt like something that would actually happen between the two characters, because Novice is a pompous ass and very highly of himself and probably wouldn't expect his ridiculous-looking bird to slug him in the stomach and toss him off the side of a ship.
Yeah, that's what you got to wrap it up to, is that basically he wasn't expecting anything from him much.
I don't think I'm ever going to be able to tell, what are they called, the Lord Battle Cuckoo and Dr. Kukurkov?
Yeah, that's his name.
That name is terrible. I spent like an hour trying to figure out how to pronounce it.
But well, they make fun of that in the book, too.
Their character designs look so similar when they're both in the same panel, I have to look for the beard.
That's true. They kind of look a little too similar. A little fun fact about the Tails adventure on Game Gear is I've been hearing that the people who did the design on the Lord Battle Cuckoo, they kept some of that design when going over to the modern Eggman. If you look, there's some where he's got the same kind of shades, the same kind of clothes, And he at one point does an exact same pose in the in the Game Gear manual that Dr. Eggman makes as a modern Eggman. So Lord Cuckoo and modern Eggman are kind of designed a little bit similar.
So Eggman got himself a new suit designed by the Battlebird Armada.
Yeah, basically.
Available at a store near you.
Shall we discuss the new Sonic Universe comic book that comes out in a week?
I don't know if we should yet, because we're launching this on Monday. The comic doesn't come out till Wednesday, and I don't think either me or Jet have read it yet.
No, you have not read it yet.
I've only seen the cover.
We do know... I do know some things. Spoiler alert. basically, what's his name? Snively betrays Eggman again, heads off, and he's going... barely heading off to Team Dark to try to team up with them or try to talk to his niece. And they got, as far as the knots about it, all I know that Eggman's launching all these other Dark Egg Legions to go after them and to go after Sonic and his friends, including a brand new team, this is the spoiler, a brand new Team Metal, which is a newly designed Metal Amy, because Eggman messed with her and took a blowtorch to her and basically redesigned her completely. A Metal Knuckles.
You mean Metal Sally, right?
Metal Sally. What did I say?
Metal Amy.
Oh, sorry. Metal Sally. Metal Knuckles. Metal Sonic, of course, again. And Metal Tails. Metal Tails is brand new. Metal Knuckles has been in, like, Sonic R.
Yeah, he's basically a Sonic R version, which is cool.
Who needs Tails doll?
Oh, this is a Tails doll. Tails doll is in the comic, though. Cream has it. It's, what the hell is that called? It's, Operation Deadly Cuddles or whatever. Project Deadly Cuddles.
I'm still waiting for a Tails doll to make a smash as the ultimate killing machine in the comic book.
Right. But you don't know what's going to happen with that thing at any time.
Well, really, for me, the coolest moment in this comic book is when all of the Dark Legionnaire leaders are warped aboard the ship in the middle of them preparing to start a new life without Robotnik, because they've just heard that he supposedly dies, that he's dead. It's really, if Robotnik dies, Mobius is going to go to shit. Let me just tell you. Because half these guys, they're ready to just raise everything around them. Robotnik's actually keeping them on a leash, which is kind of weird when you think about it. I mean, jeez.
Every time Robotnik dies, some crazy god-powered supervillain shows up out of boredom.
Yeah, like Novice or Mammoth Mogul.
Yeah, even after Ken Penders killed off Eggman for a while, there was always plenty of other villains to come.
Oh. And we also finally get to see the Nerds.
Well, they've been around before, but it's been a long time
the
since.
The Nerds are back, is what I mean. They are back, and they're being led by this big fat guy wearing a tie, and he has a big bulldozer for an arm.
Here's okay.
The design ever.
Well, we'll save most of this conversation for next time. Now, on to our comment topic for the week. If you're following us on Sega Bits right here, or you can go on Twitter and comment on there. I'll be creating a Twitter account as soon as this little podcast is over. It's Valentine's Day tomorrow on the 14th of February. And what is your favorite romantic Sonic moment? Because let's face it, when we talk about Sonic, it's all about romance.
Romance.
It's all about love.
Sonic X Big the Cat.
I'm terrified.
The only thing I could think of, which was actually a fairly well done episode of Sonic X, is when Chris had to attend a opening of his dad's business over at this little Hawaiian style beach, and he took all the characters with him except Sonic. Sonic didn't want to go; he doesn't like water. And Amy was pissed off because she, you know, she's nuts about Sonic and wanted him around him on the beach. So, Chris, in the only sympathetic episode where I felt any sympathy for him, is having to be stuck with this big business event on in the park area while his friends are hanging out at the beach. And, of course, who would come but Dr. Eggman to destroy the new little park area so he can build his own little Eggman Land death amusement park. And so Sonic's got to go and save Chris and the others. And during this whole time, there's a little subplot where Amy's looking at this one couple, and one girl makes a bracelet for her boyfriend that's made out of seashells. And so she thinks of doing the same thing for Sonic. And Sonic ends up finding Eggman at the amusement park. And Amy's joining in because she's trying to give him this this little bracelet. And, of course, it gets partially smashed. And, of course, she gets all pissed off and starts messing Eggman's shit up like crazy. Whips out her hammer and starts going to town. She shows Eggman just absolutely in fear of her, which is great. But eventually, she knocks both him and herself into the water, so Sonic, who can barely swim, his only option is to go dive in after her and to save her. And she shows her barely holding on to the little bracelet as it falls from her hands as he goes to grab her. And in the next scene, she's just out the beachside next to Cream, and she's talking about, well, where's Sonic gone and everything. And it shows Sonic way off in the distance, catching a cold and saying, oh, you gotta stay out of the water. And he's wearing the little bracelet that Amy made for her, which is kind of a symbol of her feelings for him, which I thought was really cute. But that's about it.
Just to let you guys know, I'm pretty sure Shiggs has memorized every episode of Sonic X to this level.
No. Actually, my favorite one is the one where Eggman tries to set off a volcano that sets off a chain with some other volcanoes, because it's one that I missed and that I didn't see till years later, and it has a ton of Godzilla references in it. Toho movie monsters like Mothra and the submarine Gotengo in it. It's a really awesome episode, but for the most part, Sonic's The first season was pretty good, and the other two were just pretty lame.
Yeah, I didn't care. Sonic X for the day.
So I try to make it a point to omit romance from my Sonic, because, quite frankly, it scares me. I will support this. Eggman and Ella, everybody, I want you to go to Shiggs and demand it to be in Sonic Eggs. Lots of it.
That's actually something I thought would be a great idea a year before Ian put it into the Sonic X comic. And I mentioned it on his forums that he eventually did put it in. But I don't know if it was because of my suggestion or he was just thinking that way himself. Because that's hilarious. I mean, it's both of them are voiced by Mike Pollock. So you can imagine that in the anime if that ever happened.
That'd be hilarious. He put a message in the back of his mind.
Yeah. What would be the most unromantic Sonic moment you could think of?
Who, me?
Anybody.
Let's see. Well, could I answer the... when I first read this question in the notes section...
Yeah, I know it's awkward. I meant it to be for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, well, the Amy shippers and the furries have kind of ruined any real opinion of I could possibly have for Sonic romance.
Yeah, one rule I have if you're doing this in the comments is no fan fiction and no shipping of stuff you like. It's got to be something that actually happened either in the games, in the comic, or in the cartoons.
But if I were to say something, it would probably be Sonic, I can't even say it without cringing, but Sonic Awakening Sally with a Kiss and Sonic number 50. It
My
was really
just
beautiful.
Turned.
The art just looked great. There you can see that there's some genuine emotion in there. And especially compared to some of the later Sonic Sally things, which honestly just felt kind of fake.
Now, wasn't that only in the 50 special edition, and it didn't happen originally in the...
Well, actually, the 50 special edition had a better version of that. They had like a full-page spread of that, but I was actually referring to the original issue 50. It also had a version of that. Now, as for least romantic, that would have to be Evil Sonic acting like a pimp and trying to make out with every single female Sonic character in the Archie comic continuity, which still haunts this comic book series in the Sonic community because it was so bad and resulted in a such a horrible, horrible cover. Sonic playing the playa or something like that. It was just,
yeah, I was embarrassed to even get that issue.
I mean, I'm tempted to say the slap, but I know that, well, for one, all the Amy fans be saying, Sally Shipper, when I really would prefer Sonic to just not love anything and just be an adventurer or an action hero.
This is where the games get it right and the comics don't quite do that.
What did you say?
This is where the games usually get it right, but not having Sonic with any relationship, except for the god-awful Sonic 06.
Sonic and Elise. Actually, no. Sonic and Elise running through a field. That's the least romantic thing in Sonic history.
It was cringe-inducing.
It was creepy and cringeworthy, yes.
I don't know about the running through the field so much as kissing the dead animal body.
I completely forgot about that. Yes, necrophilia. Very unsexy. Very not romantic.
With some bestiality in there.
Oh, necrophilia and bestiality. I'm sorry. My God. Thank you for putting that in full perspective. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I changed my mind again. It's when Sonic kissed a dead blue giant hedgehog.
When Sonic kissed a dead giant hedgehog.
That probably happened somewhere in the comics.
He kissed a giant blue anthropomorphic hedgehog. A giant dead blue anthropomorphic hedgehog. That is my final answer.
There you go. You got anything, Jet, or no?
You already said the least romantic one that was on my mind.
I think that's the least romantic one on everybody's mind. Okay, that was our first episode, folks. Let us know what you think, and we have comments on the Twitter area. Also, you can comment right here on the Sega Bits. We'll be trying to do this either bi-weekly or monthly, depending on, well, how much news we get on Sonic and Sonic-related stuff.
Yeah, but since we have two new comics every month, we should be able to do it at least bi-weekly, if anyone cares about the comics, which you should.
Let us know if you want it bi-weekly or monthly. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Later.
Say goodbye, Knuckles.
Oh, goodbye. Finally, we can relate.
And we're out.
Our side by side is me. I knew all along we'd find some way to communicate.